Shalom Aleichem. Welcome to Jewish Short Stories from Eastern Europe and Beyond. I'm Leonard Nimoy. This 13-part series features many of the best Jewish stories of the past 150 years, written in English or translated from Russian, Hebrew, or Yiddish. Directed by Joan Micklin Silver, our readers include some of the finest performers of stage, screen, and television: Alan Alda, Lauren Bacall, Claire Bloom, Elliot Gould, Walter Matthau, and many more. The 32 stories in our series may at first seem rather diverse, if not incongruous. They were, after all, written in different languages, at different times, in different countries, and with very different literary styles. Some do not even concern themselves with explicitly Jewish subjects. But as you listen, I think you'll agree that all have this in common. Written by Jewish authors, they somehow reflect a sensibility, a voice, a worldview born of 1,000 years of Jewish life and culture in Central and Eastern Europe. And whether through humor, tragedy, or, as is more often the case, equal measures of both, they struggle with a common question. What does it mean? What can it possibly mean to live as a Jew in the modern world? Although the authors of today's two stories both grew up in Eastern Europe, they lived far enough apart in time to bring very different experiences and perspectives to their work. Shimon Frug wrote early in the century when it was still possible to portray European Jewish life with a touch of humor. Isaiah Spiegel, on the other hand, survived the Holocaust, and his stories are clearly shaped by the burden of that experience. We begin with The Last Kopeck by Shimon Frug. A kopeck is 1/100th of a ruble. Not much money even then, but still a coin all the same. As we'll hear, the Talmud teaches that the Messiah will come when the last coin vanishes from the world. What then should be done when the world is down to its last kopeck? That very question arose in Shmunevka, a small town in the Ukraine. The Last Kopeck by Shimon Frug. Our reader is David Paymer.
In a certain village by the name of Shmunevka, where once lived Reb Leiba Lapeltzel, whose memory for a blessing, and where since then not a year passes but 6 or 7 twins are born, in this same famous village an event took place which is worthwhile relating. One fine morning it became known that not one single kopeck coin was left in the whole village. At first sight, it seems an extravagant statement, for how could it possibly happen that there should not be a single kopeck left among a village full of Jews? True, it happens that nearly half a town full of Jews not only haven't a kopeck, but not even a broken groschen. And there is no flour for the Sabbath bread, not a bundle of straw with which to heat the stove, not a bit of a shirt on a single back. But there is in that same community a tax farmer who has roast liver, a reformed rabbi who eats crabs every day and has coffee and rusks, to say nothing of a doctor who has an unorthodox kitchen, an apothecary with a shaven chin, an innkeeper who plays cards on the Sabbath day, and a usurer who, if you ask him, can say how many feather beds, pillows, and candlesticks there are in the village. All these people without whom, alas, the tiniest Jewish village in the world cannot prosper. But however that may be, things happen in this world which are contrary to the laws of nature. That is why, as I am telling you, it occurred in Shmunevka that, look from today till tomorrow, you could not find a Jew, may it never happen to you, who could produce one single kopeck. Not even if you offered a ruble for a kopeck. When the rabbi got to know of this, he first washed his hands and said the blessing for something new. Then he sent to call the leading householders of the village to a conference with him. The beadle ran about like mad through all the streets, and immediately after the evening service, the people assembled at the rabbi's house. The rabbi took a generous pinch of snuff, cleared his throat, and began with these words. "Gentlemen, we can't rail against the ruler of the universe. No doubt he is right, and his judgment is right, and a Jew must accept it all willingly. Because of the great multitude of our sins, we are certainly not worthy of even a thousandth part of the bounty and the graciousness he vouchsafes unto us. Therefore, we must realize that whatever God, blessed be his name, does for us, it is only for the sake of our ancestors, and in particular, my friends, the coming of the Messiah, which is the greatest thing in the world, and for which Jews have already been waiting for thousands of years. Tell me, how is it possible that we, with our good deeds begging your pardon, our piety, our Jewishness, should be privileged to bring about the redemption? But one does not ask questions of the Almighty. The Gemara says, the Son of David will not come until there is no man to be found with a single coin in his pocket. Jews, commend yourselves to his dear name. In the whole of Shmunefka, there is not one single kopeck left. So therefore, Jews, prepare yourselves for the coming of the Messiah. For several minutes, the people sat there confused. The coming of the Messiah? It was not a light thing to say, prepare yourselves for the coming of the Messiah. True, what Jew does not believe that now, and he will hear the sound of the shofar, the long, drawn-out blast of joy which will resound from one end of the world to the other, and that the righteous Redeemer will appear on the Mount of Olives, riding on his white horse. But to say suddenly, prepare yourselves, the Messiah is coming? Rabbi, said one of the householders at last, then it means Palestine and the lovers of Zion and the colonies? At this, Menachem Mendel, the contractor, stood up, drew a thick packet of papers from his breast pocket, tied up with a piece of blue woolen thread, banged his fist on the table, and said, people, wait a while. This very day, I have made up the accounts of the building, the public baths, I mean, and I intended asking the rabbi to call a meeting so that... Eh? What? Voices rose on all sides. What accounts? What is he after now with his accounts? Hush, friends, hush, said the rabbi. Tell us, Reb Menachem Mendel, he went on, turning to the contractor, tell us what you wanted to communicate to the people. I wanted to say, Jews, that as regards the accounts, in drawing up the total, I find after paying for the building, the public baths, I mean, there is some public money left with me. How much? How much? A kopeck. And Menachem Mendel groped and drew out from among the papers a little packet and a piece of paper, unwrapped it, and placed on the table a kopeck. For about 5 minutes there was unbroken silence in the room in which the meeting was held. Those nearest to it looked at the kopeck as though they did not know what they were looking at. Young men craned their necks to get a sight of the kopeck, even from a distance, as if they had never seen the face of a coin in their lives. Finally, the rabbi again spoke, and he said, a balance, do you say, Reb Menachem Mendel? Of course you are right. A balance is a balance. But perhaps you have made a mistake, Reb Menachem Mendel. One may sometimes make a mistake in an account, you know. A mistake, of course it's a mistake, people were saying on all sides. That's a nice thing to get now at such a time, an account from the contractor. It's a funny business, I tell you, if you deal with Jews, Menachem Mendel cried angrily. A joke, as sure as I am a Jew. Last year, when the accounts were made up, and I told you that there was not enough money for the building, you made a row. It's a lie, you shouted. There must be at least another 150 rubles. Isn't that the truth? And now, when I tell you that there is a balance to the good, and put it down in hard cash, you want to have it the other way round. Reb Menachem Mendel, the rabbi intervened at this point. I beg your pardon 1,000 times. Don't take any notice of it. Young men, fools, they don't understand what they are saying. Don't take it to heart. The account is not the main thing just now. It is the kopeck. Because, you understand, and here the rabbi again turned to the assembly, people, he began, it seems that because of the multitude of our sins, the time has not yet come for us Jews to be redeemed. The Messiah cannot come yet, because that which is spoken of in the Gemara has not yet come about. As you see, there is still money here. Rabbi, said one of the householders, a wise Jew, who in years gone by was the first counselor in all communal affairs, Rabbi, he said, we must consider the matter and decide what to do. All right, said the rabbi. Tell us, Reb Kalman, what are we to do? Reb Kalman pondered for a few minutes, and then he said, Rabbi, I think the kopeck should be thrown into the river. Into the river, repeated the young man. Did you hear that? Throw it into the river, he said. Hush, hush, the rabbi called out. Keep quiet, young people. Let us talk. And what do you think about it, Reb Shloima, Reb Avram Beyer, Reb Mordechai? Reb Shloima, a scholarly Jew, took his beard into his hand, coughed, and said, into the river? No, not into the river. Because firstly, that would be ignoring the commandment, thou shalt not destroy. And secondly, it is really no plan at all. The kopeck might be swallowed by a pike. And one of us may either catch the particular pike or buy it and so get back the same kopeck. But on the other hand, we are not fishers, and none of us will buy the pike because there is no money. That is true, but there are no impossibilities for the Almighty. So my advice is, first of all, since we have to get rid of the kopeck in order to bring about the redemption, then the sin of destroying is not so great. And since it is no plan at all to throw the kopeck into the river, let us throw it into the public baths. There are no fish to catch in the public baths. And besides, there is such a deep, thick layer of mud at the bottom that the kopeck will sink down there forever. Yes! Yes! This is really a plan, came a chorus of voices from all around. No, my dear Jews, it is no plan at all, interposed Reb Mordechai Yanover, a modernist Jew, who was for the past 15 years the principal of the Talmud Torah. It is no plan at all to take public money and throw it into the mud. Here is a better idea. For about 10 years now, the roof of the Talmud Torah is leaking. It would be only right to assign the kopeck for repairs to the Talmud Torah. What do you think, Herr Glassman? Reb Shloima Glassman, the official representative to the government of the great synagogue of Shmunevka, stroked his little gray beard and said, of course, Reb Mordechai, you are quite right. The Talmud Torah needs repairing, and it would be the right thing to do, but not now. For if the Messiah comes, we shall not need any Talmud Torah here. It is true that we shall not need any houses of learning or synagogues either, but there is a vast difference between a Talmud Torah and a house of learning. A Talmud Torah is only an elementary school on Jewish lines, while a synagogue, a house of learning, is a sacred edifice. You say that the rain drips through the roof of the Talmud Torah? Doesn't it drip through into the synagogue as well? Your roof has 3 holes, ours has 13. Of course, we shall take neither the Talmud Torah nor the synagogue with us when the Messiah comes, but to leave behind us a synagogue, a sacred edifice with holes in it, that is a desecration of the holy name. Therefore, my advice is that the kopeck should be assigned for repairs to our synagogue, so that there should, God forbid, be no desecration of the holy name. You talk of desecration of the holy name? Cried in a screech Reb Gershon Tvek, the president of the Burial Society. A desecration of the holy name, Reb Shloima? No, let me talk. A synagogue is certainly a sacred edifice, and much more than a Talmud Torah. But what about a cemetery, eh? The rabbi says that the Messiah is coming. Good. We shall take out of the synagogue the scrolls of the law, the 7-branched candlestick from its stand, the candelabras, the curtains before the ark of the law, the laver, and even all the tattered leaves under the reader's desk, and there will be only the 4 walls and the roof left. But the cemetery and the graves and the headstones will remain here intact. Now tell me this, people. For the last 20 years, the cemetery has been left practically unfenced. Pigs and cows and horses go about among the headstones and trample down the graves. Isn't that a desecration of the holy name? Would it not be the fairest way to assign the kopeck for putting up a paling for the cemetery? The cemetery is more important than the synagogue. And besides, our houses of learning have more revenue than the cemetery. Revenue? Do you say revenue? Glassman woke up. What do you mean? Don't we account for every kopeck? Your expenditure on repairs, too, came with a laugh from one of the young men. Eh? What? On repairs? Glassman shrieked aloud. And the burial society? The topers? The drunkards? Do you ever demand an account from them? Ed Glassman, I insist that you keep a check on your tongue, Reb Gershon Tvek screeched. You do better not to start that sort of thing, otherwise... Friends, friends, the rabbi quickly intervened. Please, please, don't forget yourselves. Jews. The same evening, while the meeting was being held at the home of the rabbi of Shmunefka, a celestial messenger came to the Messiah from the Father of the Universe, notifying him that in a village of the name of Shmunefka, there was not one single kopeck left among the Jews. It was true that there was still one kopeck, public property, but a meeting was being held at the rabbi's house, and they would decide what to do with the kopeck. Jews, bless them, get rid of hundreds and thousands of public money, so there would be not much difficulty about a kopeck. And therefore, the words of the Gemara in relation to the coming of the Messiah must be fulfilled. Not one single kopeck? The Messiah asked in astonishment. How can that be? How can it happen that there should not be a single kopeck left among Jews? Especially the Jews of today, who for a kopeck are ready to tear out each other's beards and earlocks, and for a ruble they will sell their own father. So the question arises, how could it happen that an entire congregation should become so impoverished? Of course, there are no impossibilities for the creator of the universe, and what the Gemara says must surely be fulfilled. So, I'd better go along. The Messiah ordered his white donkey to be led out of the stable and his shofar to be got ready. The donkey, which had been standing in the stable for hundreds of years, was covered with dirt and dust, so that it was a difficult job to clean him up. The shofar, too, was dust-laden and had to be soaked in vinegar for a whole hour. It was quite natural. Seeing and hearing all that goes on among the Jews, the Messiah could never have dreamt that he would soon have to go to redeem the children of Israel. He couldn't have foreseen that Jews would be left without a single kopeck. Besides, as you surely remember, the Gemara mentions another sign of the coming of the Messiah. When a generation arises that is all saints, or else all sinners. Well, as regards saints, there is nothing to be said. Fine saints Jews are nowadays. So the only hope is in the generation of sinners, that is, everybody to become wicked heretics. But tell me, I ask you, do you know present-day heretics? Does the modern Jew know what heresy means? Now, once upon a time, long ago, there were real heretics. A heretic of old used to study for years how to be a proper heretic. At first, the heretic was a young man with a keen brain for learning. Before he was married, he used to spend all his time at the house of learning. After he was married, he lived with his parents-in-law, and having no need to worry about making a living, he went on studying. The woman's questions from the section of the Talmud that deals with the Levirate, architecture from the tractate dealing with Goshen, domiciliary rights in the cities of refuge. Just study, study, study. Afterwards, he somehow got hold of a little modernist book, a prohibited work in short or long lines. Then the devil brought down a teacher from a government school, a university graduate, a newspaper, the Lebanon, a little volume, the Dawn, in later years, a copy of Hamelitz or Hatzfira. What with one thing and another, there was a whirl set up in the young man's brain. Darkness descended upon it, as when there is an eclipse of the sun, and gradually the one-time respectable young man would emerge as a complete heretic, up to every trick, full of terrifying questions and dark expositions. For instance, he would interpret the law prohibiting the lighting of fires on the Sabbath in such a way that it appeared as if smoking on the Sabbath were the right thing to do. It was a heretic of this sort that the angels wrestled with and did not vanquish. A heretic like that used to pull a long nose at the angel of death himself and die with his transgressions on his soul without repenting and without repeating the deathbed confession. Now, if there were to arise a whole generation of that kind of heretic, the Messiah would have no option but would be compelled to come. But what does one find among the heretics of today? Jews ride and smoke on the Sabbath, do not fast even on the Day of Atonement, eat forbidden food. You ask one of these heretics, "Why do you smoke on the Sabbath?" "Because I want to smoke," he will answer you. "Why do you ride?" "Because I don't want to walk." "Why don't you fast on the Day of Atonement?" "Because I want to eat." To the point, without any explanations. If you tried him, you would find that he can't even read Hebrew, has already forgotten the ABC. It is this cold-bloodedness towards God, towards religion, towards the obligation which rests upon every man to believe in some sort of a God, but to believe profoundly and sincerely. It is this cold-bloodedness which constitutes the heretic of today. A heretic of old used to eat forbidden food in the name of modernism, wear a short jacket in the name of modernism, read a newspaper in the name of modernism. And when a society was formed in Petersburg for the dissemination of modernism, he used to send his last 10 rubles and collect from other people as much as possible to support the society. But a present-day heretic? Above all, he is a coarse fellow who hasn't even heard the word modernism. And if he happens to be an educated man with a diploma, what does he do? As a student, he himself accepts donations, studies, eats, and drinks at the expense of the society. And afterwards, when he becomes a lawyer, a doctor, an engineer, and makes hundreds and thousands, he never remembers the bread and salt with which the modernists provided him. And if somebody reminds him, he pretends to know nothing about it. And if he is reminded in 10 years' time that the undertakings he gave the society to repay them have not yet been carried out, he answers that 10 years is beyond the statute of limitation, and the agreements are null and void. What can you do? Bring an action against him? Now that, you see, is the kind of heretic that even the devils out of hell will get tired of bothering with. And the Messiah certainly has no use for them. So, there is only the first way left for bringing the messianic times. Not a kopeck in the pocket of any Jew. No money, no Jewish rich, no philanthropists to whom God himself, poor thing, has to pay usury in the shape of the best portions of the law on Sabbaths and festivals, seats at the eastern wall in the synagogue, forgiveness of sins, first places in the processions at the festival of the rejoicing in the law, clamorous benedictions, hot, fresh, writhing prayers over their dead bodies and lamentations from one end of the world to the other. No honors, no pride of descent, no money, and no blood. And this, you will please remember, has already been fulfilled in this world. And where? In Shmunefka. Swift as an eagle, the righteous Redeemer flew on his snow-white donkey. Out of forests and into forests stretched the long, long road, and sweet as the note of a violin sounded the voice of the Messiah as he sang the words of the beloved psalm. When the Lord turned against the captivity of Zion, we were like them that dream. Then was our mouth filled with laughter and our tongue with singing. Then said they among the heathen, "The Lord hath done great things for them. The Lord hath done great things for us, whereof we are glad. Turn again our captivity, O Lord, as the streams in the south. They that sow in tears shall reap in joy. He that goeth forth and weepeth, bearing precious seed, shall doubtless come again with rejoicing, bringing his sheaves with him." Loudly and freely, sweetly and lovingly, the voice of the Messiah rang over the hills and valleys, forests and fields, rivers and chasms. With awe and joy they drew towards him. Heaven and the stars that shine, the valley and the hill, to hear, to feel, and drink their fill of his voice divine. Out of forests and into forests stretched the great long road, and the farther he went, brighter and more bright grew the face of the Messiah, until he came into Shmunefka. And when he rode into Shmunefka, the meeting had just finished. just as it ought to be. Jews were pulling each other by the beards and earlocks, fiery blows, resounding smacks, oaths and curses like peas out of a sack. One was yelling, "For the Talmud Torah!" Another, "For the synagogue!" A third, "For the cemetery!" The fourth and the fifth supported the first and the second, and above all the voices rose the screaming of women and the bitter wailing of little children. The street was all upside down, and the earth was trembling. "No," said the Messiah, "I have come too soon." He turned the donkey round and went back.
That was The Last Kopeck, written by Shimon Frug and read by David Paymer. The translation by Hannah Berman may be found in Yisroel, the First Jewish Omnibus, edited by Joseph Leftwich and published by Thomas Yoseloff. You're listening to Jewish Short Stories from Eastern Europe and Beyond, a co-production of the National Yiddish Book Center and public radio station KCRW, Santa Monica. The full 13-hour series is available on cassette from the National Yiddish Book Center. For information, call 1-800-9-SERIES, 1-800-973-7437. We know, of course, that for the Jews of Europe, the Messiah did not come. Only self-appointed political